Chapter 18. There was no day or night that passed when I didn't listen for sounds from the sky. Both my sense of touch and my sense of hearing were beginning to make up for my lack of sight. I separated the sounds, and each became different. I grew to know the different cries of the birds that flew by the quay, even though I had no idea what any of them were. I made up my own names for them according to the sound of their cries. Only the occasional bleat of the gull gave me a picture of that bird, for I had heard and seen them many times around the seawall in Willemstad. I knew how the breeze sounded when it crossed the sea grape. It fluttered the small leaves. When it went through the palm fronds, the storm hadn't ripped away. It made a flapping noise. I knew the rustle of the lizards. Some were still on the island after the storm. I could only guess they'd somehow climbed high into the palms. Otherwise, how could they have lived with water lapping over the entire quay? I even knew when Stewcat was approaching me. His soft paws on a dried leaf made only a tiny crackle, but I heard it. One mid-morning in early August, I was on the hill near the camp when I heard the far-off drone of an airplane. It was upwind from me, but the sound was very clear. I reached down to feel Stewcat. He had heard it too. His body was tense, his head pointed toward the sound. I dropped to my knees by the fire, feeling around the edges until I grasped the end of a stick. I drew it back. Timothy had taught me to lay the fire sticks like a wheel so that the fire burned slowly in the center, but always had a few unburned ends on the outside. I tended the fire a half dozen times each day. I spit on the stick until I heard a sizzle. Then I knew there was enough fire or charring on it to light off the base of dried palm fronds beneath the signal fire. I listened again for the drone. Yes, it was still there. Closer now. I ran down the hill straight to the signal fire, felt around the palm fronds, and then pushed the stick over them. I blew on it until I heard the crackle of flames. In a few minutes, the signal fire was roaring, and I ran to South Beach where I would be able to hear the aircraft without hearing the crackling fire. Standing on South Beach, I listened. The plane was coming closer. I yelled toward the sky, "Here! Down here!" I decided to run back to East Beach to stand near the fire and the new arrangement of rocks that spelled out, "Help." Thinking any moment the plane would dive and I would hear the roar of its engines across the quay at low altitude, I stood with Stewcat a few feet from the sloshing surf. I waited and waited, but there was no thundering sound from the sky. I could hear nothing but the crackling of the fire, the washing sound of the surf. I ran back to South Beach, where I stood very still and listened. The plane had gone. Slowly, I returned to East Beach and sat down in sea grape shade. I put my head down on my arms and sobbed, feeling no shame for what I was doing. There seemed to be no hope of ever leaving the quay, yet I knew I could not always live this way. One day I would become ill, or another storm would rage against the island. I could never survive alone. There had been many bad and lonely days and nights, but none as bad as this. Stewcat came up, purring, rubbing along my legs. I held him a long time, wondering why the aircraft had not come down when the pilots saw the smoke. At last, I thought, perhaps they didn't see the smoke. I knew it was going up into the sky, but was it white smoke that might be lost in the blue-white sky? Or was it dark and oily smoke that would make a smudge against the blueness? There was no way to tell. If only there were some oily boards, the kind that drifted around the waters of the Shattagat. But I knew that the wood floating up on the beach consisted mostly of branches or stumps that had been in the water for weeks or months. There was nothing in them to make dark smoke. I began to think of all the things on the island. Green palm fronds might send off dark smoke, but until they were dried, they were too tough to tear off the trees. The vines on North Beach might make dark smoke, but the leaves on them were very small. The sea grape! I snapped some off, feeling it between my fingers. Yes, there was oil in it. I got up and went over to the fire, tossing a piece in. In a moment I heard it popping the way hot grease pops when it is dropped into water. I knew how to do it now. The smoke would rise from the quay in a fat black column to lead the planes up the Devil's Mouth. If I heard another aircraft, I'd start a fire and then throw bundles of sea grape into it until I was certain a strong signal was going up from the island. Timothy hadn't thought about black smoke, I was sure. That was it. Feeling better now, I walked back up the hill to gather the few palm fronds that were left for a new firebase. I woke up at dawn on the morning of August 20th, 1942, to hear thunder, and wondered when the first drops of rain would spatter on the roof of the shelter. I heard Stewcat, down near my feet, let off a low growl. I said, "It's only thunder, Stewcat. We need the water." But as I continued to listen, it did not seem to be thunder. It was a heavy sound, hard and sharp, not rolling. More like an explosion, or a series of explosions. It felt as if the Kay were shaking. I got up from the mat, moving out from under the shelter. The air did not feel like rain. It was dry, and there was no heavy heat. "They're explosions, Stu," I said. "Very near us." "Maybe destroyers," I thought. I could not hear any aircraft engines. Maybe destroyers fighting it out with enemy submarines. And those heavy, hard, sharp sounds could be the depth charges that my father said were used by the Navy to sink U-boats. This time, I didn't bother to take a piece of firewood down to East Beach. I dug into the tin box for the cellophane-wrapped package of big wooden matches. Four were left. I ran down the hill. At the signal fire, I searched around for a rock. Finding one, I knelt down by the fire and struck a match against it. Nothing happened. I felt the head of the match. The sulfur had rubbed off. I struck another. It made a small popping noise and then went out. I had two more matches left, and for a moment, I didn't know whether to use them or run back up the hill to the campfire. I stopped to listen, feeling sweat trickle down my face. The explosions were still thundering across the sea. Then I heard the drone of an aircraft. I took a deep breath and struck the next-to-last match. I heard it flare and ran my left hand over the top of it. There was heat. It was burning. I reached deep into the fire pile, holding the match there until it began to burn the tips of my fingers. The fire caught, and in a moment was roaring. I ran across the beach to begin pulling sea grape down. I carried the first bundle to the fire and threw it in. Soon, I could smell it burning. It began to pop and crackle as the flames got to the natural oils in the branches. By the time I had carried 10 or 15 bundles of sea grape to the fire, tumbling them in, I was sure that a column of black smoke was rising into the sky over the quay. Suddenly, a deafening roar swept overhead. I knew it was an aircraft crossing the quay not much higher than the palms. I could feel the wind from it. Forgetting for a moment, I yelled, "Timothy! They've come!" The aircraft seemed to be making a sharp turn. It roared across the quay again, seeming even lower this time because the rush of wind from it was hot. I could smell exhaust fumes. I yelled, "Down here! Down here!" and waved my arms. The plane made another tight circle, coming back almost directly over me. Its engine was screaming. I shouted at Stewcat, "We'll be rescued!" But I think that he'd gone to hide in the sea grape. This time, however, the aircraft did not circle back. It did not make another low pass over the island. I heard the sound going away. Soon, it had vanished completely. Then I realized that the explosions had stopped, too. A familiar silence settled over the quay. All the strength went out of my body. It was the first real chance of rescue, and maybe there would not be another. The pilot had flown away, perhaps thinking I was just another native fisherman, waving at an aircraft. I knew that the color of my skin was very dark now. Worse, I knew that the smoke might have blotted out the lines of rocks that spelled help. Feeling very ill, I climbed the slope again, throwing myself down on the mat in the hut. I didn't cry. There was no use in doing that. I wanted to die. After a while, I looked over toward Timothy's grave. I said, "Why didn't you take us with you?"